We need to make sure that we build a mutual culture of trust. There will be no old boys network. There will be no old girls network.
The Alaska National Guard has a new adjutant general. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, January 30th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Homer residents find joy in the strange sport of curling.
When the two granite stones collide together, it just like echoes throughout the whole building. And it's like, man, it's going to be a good day. Boom.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Over the years, Alaskans like you have donated over $10 million to nonprofit organizations benefiting everything from Alaska's youth to the arts to healthcare. You've even donated to public radio to keep quality programming alive and well in Alaska. So come on, Alaska, warm your heart by sharing your PFD. Pick, click, give. This message on Alaska Public Media comes from ExxonMobil, BP Alaska, and Alaska Mental Health Trust.
At a press conference in downtown Anchorage today, Governor Bill Walker introduced the new Adjutant General for the Alaska National Guard. Retired Colonel Lori Hummel served in Army Intelligence for 30 years after graduating from West Point and is the first woman to lead the Guard. She says in her time with the armed forces, she's seen walls come down as equality and opportunity extended further into the military's diverse ranks. She plans to ensure the Guard follows the same course.
We need to make sure that we have a moral and ethical climate that is worthy of our membership as military members. And we need to make sure that we build a mutual culture of trust. There will be no old boys network. There will be no old girls network.
Hummel's hire comes after accusations of misconduct within the Alaska Army National Guard led to dismissals and investigations under Governor Sean Parnell's administration. Hummel says she and her staff will begin reviewing Guard policies and procedures to prevent sexual assault, harassment, favoritism, and other improprieties documented in a report by the Office of Complex Investigations. A group of bills introduced by Democratic legislators aim to modify protocols for reporting offenses within the Guard and update the Uniform Code of Military Justice. Governor Walker says his office will help that effort as a special investigator continues looking into years of allegations.
Those wrongdoers will be brought to justice, as I said before.
Hummel also assumes the role as Commissioner of the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. Her deputy will be retired Air Force Colonel Bob Dole, who left the Air National Guard in 2012 and earlier worked as an attorney within the Department of Law. In November, Hummel ran an unsuccessful campaign for the Northeast Anchorage seat in the State House. The state is taking another step toward increasing the availability of natural gas in the Fairbanks area. Governor Bill Walker recently refocused the state-backed Interior Energy Project to tap Cook Inlet gas, and as KUAC's Dan Bross reports, it's now proposing the purchase of a private utility to get the gas to more Fairbanks residents.
The Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority has signed a letter of intent to purchase Fairbanks Natural Gas parent company Pentex. ADA spokesman Karsten Rodvik says the state corporation would pay $52.5 million for Pentex company assets currently used to supply about 1,000 Fairbanks area customers with Cook Inlet gas.
The LNG plant at Point McKenzie, it includes the trucking components, the storage components, the entire set of assets.
The deal also includes a distribution system in the core area of Fairbanks. A piping network FNG is already in the process of expanding. Pentex and FNG president Dan Britton says ADA's access to low-cost capital would help the company pay for infrastructure needed to meet new gas demand.
Our current gas supply is maxed out of the Cook Inlet. In order to expand more, it requires for additional liquefaction capacity out of the Cook Inlet in some form.
FNG isn't the only Fairbanks area utility looking for more natural gas. Golden Valley Electric Association wants to transition some generators from oil to gas, and the borough-run Interior Gas Utility, or IGU, is laying distribution pipe to serve customers outside FNG's downtown service area. ADA's Rodvik says state ownership of the company will facilitate cooperation with the other utilities.
Promote an integrated gas distribution system that can be built and operated in a much more efficient manner for the benefit of interior residents.
The deal opens up the potential of FNG and IGU merging, but even if they don't, IGU board chair Bob Shefchik says having both entities operating on a cost-based instead of profit-based business model should be a plus for consumers.
The idea that there be a single postage stamp rate for all residential gas customers in the interior is a likely outcome whether there's a merger or not.
Shefchik calls the state plan bold and decisive and believes the $52 million price is fair.
One could not replace what they have for that $52 million.
As evidence of the value, Shefchik cites Hillcorp's recent attempt to buy FNG's gas processing plant, a deal blocked by the state. Ada's Rodvik says the state corporation plans to pay for the Pentex purchase with money from a revolving fund. Ada's board of directors must approve the deal. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
The Fairbanks Natural Gas acquisition will also come under scrutiny from the legislature. Key Republicans like Anchorage Representative Mike Hawker are skeptical of the utility's purchase.
We have a long history of failed dreams when it comes to these equity investments by Ada.
Hawker says the deal is akin to the state investing in grain terminals and fish farms. He's also critical of how the deal has been brokered, even likening it to insider trading. Pentex, the parent company of Fairbanks Natural Gas, was positioned to sell assets to Hillcorp before the state intervened in December.
I'm very concerned about state government getting in the way of the private sector with regards to the Fairbanks utility purchase.
Governor Bill Walker has pushed back against the criticism. At a press conference today, he called the letter of intent a first step and said he was committed to a transparent process.
We don't believe we're in any sort of overreach situation. It's time that somebody reaches out to Fairbanks, and that's what we're doing. So any reaching we're doing is reaching out to the Interior Alaska energy consumers to bring some relief to them.
While money for a Fairbanks energy project has been appropriated, there are conditions on the funding that could require statutory changes from the legislature before the $52.5 million can be spent on the utility purchase. Cook Inlet Region Incorporated has put the second phase of its Fire Island wind farm on hold because of a lack of customers. A plan that once envisioned 33 turbines on the island west of Anchorage has stalled at 11. Siri's only customer is the Chugach Electric Association. Chugach says it's taking all the wind power it can under present conditions. The other utilities have turned Siri down. The Municipal Light and Power Company says it's not interested. And the Matanuska Electric Association says it doesn't pencil out for them. Golden Valley Electric Association is so far away that the cost of power balloons by the time it gets there. So Suzanne Gibson, vice president of Fire Island Wind, says that for now, phase two of the wind farm is off. She says the state lacks the regulatory framework to deal with the situation.
In the lower 48, there's no question that we would be constructing the second phase of Fire Island next year, or actually this year, 2015 already. But unfortunately, there's just not the right regulatory and legislative framework here in Alaska to allow us to do it.
The Regulatory Commission of Alaska is beginning to look at how utilities should deal with independent power producers, and Gibson welcomes that development because, unlike lower 48 power companies, Alaska utilities are not federally regulated. One issue is what are known as wheeling charges, the money that utilities charge to move power through their grids. Gibson says that's why a tentative deal for Siri to sell wind farm power to Golden Valley has apparently collapsed.
We were working with them, and we thought that we were going to get an agreement with them. And what we offered them was 6.3 cents a kilowatt hour to a utility that generates half of its power at 13.6 cents. So this is like less than half of the cost to generate their own power. But they couldn't see their way through it by the time they transport the power across another utility's system to get it up to Fairbanks. They turned it into something that they estimated was 20 cents a kilowatt. And so they didn't see the benefit for it.
The Regulatory Commission has set a date of February 11th to take up the issue of independent power producers. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, scientists express concern over a new subsistence fishery on the Kenai and Kasilof rivers.
It's a very tumultuous fishing method that flies in the face of all the other regulatory things that are in place to benefit the fish resource.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the 2015 statewide BP Teachers of Excellence Program. Teacher nomination forms are available at bpteachers.com.
Want to know more about how you and your family may get help buying health care coverage or avoid a tax penalty? Go to getcoveredak.org or call 211. This message sponsored by the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, a nonprofit health organization.
A new federal subsistence fishery rule adds set gill netting to the Kenai and Kasilof rivers. State and federal biologists are concerned the new rule will hamper conservation efforts aimed at preserving king salmon and other fish species in the rivers. But the Nanilchik Traditional Council, which asked for the right to set gill net, says it can fish responsibly. KDLL's Shaylin Cochran reports.
The Federal Subsistence Board signed off on the proposal last week, and they did so despite objections from both the Alaska Department of Fish and Game and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, which oversees subsistence use. The proposal was submitted by the Nanilchik Traditional Council, and most of the concern is about the non-selective nature of gill nets.
So when we talk about the conservation concerns that both agencies have, it's not just king salmon, it's the suite of all the fisheries resources in the Kenai River.
That's ADF&G management biologist Robert Begich. The recognized subsistence areas on the Kenai River are around the Russian River Falls, Moose Range Meadows, and just south of Skelak Lake, all active habitat areas for several species.
That area of the river up there, it's only open to fishing with bait and multiple hooks for 1 month a year, and 2011 was the last time that king salmon were allowed to be harvested, and we've been closing that area by emergency order since then. So it's a very tumultuous fishing method that flies in the face of kind of all the other regulatory things that are in place to benefit the fish resource.
We want people to understand that we are 100% conservation-minded.
That's Ivan Insuleski. He's the executive director of the Nanilchik Traditional Council, and he says the gill nets are simply another method of harvest added to what subsistence users are already allowed, which includes rod and reel, dip nets, and fish wheels.
And I think one of the things that people don't quite understand is that the feds under the subsistence program have so much leeway to either shut down or make emergency orders to close down those fisheries. And as I noted in my testimony, you know, the in-season federal manager has closed down the king harvest on subsistence the last 2 years. There's absolutely no way that this fishery would be implemented that would, one, that we would implement it on our end that would create a conservation concern, we believe, or that wouldn't have, you know, processes in places to maintain that conservation.
Subsistence users are allowed 4,000 sockeye and 1,000 king salmon. Barely a drop in the bucket relative to the overall sockeye return in Cook Inlet, but it's a pretty large proportion of the king salmon return, which totaled fewer than 17,000 last year on the Kenai River. And Selesky says the push to allow the use of set nets is less about slaying fish and more about tradition.
It's definitely important because it's the actual traditional means of the community of Nanilchik. And so that's, you know, that keeps in line with the culture and the tradition of our people. But it also allows for an opportunity for, you know, the community to work on, you know, subsistence harvest versus just individuals. So it keeps that connection to the history and the culture as well.
There's a lot to figure out before those nets hit the water, though. I also spoke with Jeff Anderson, the field supervisor for the Kenai Fish and Wildlife Service, and he says in the weeks and months ahead, they'll have to sort out whether the use of gill nets even fits into the already established regulatory framework for the Kenai, and there are more specific questions to answer on the Kasilof.
I think for the Kasilof River, it will be, you know, working out the details on an operational plan for, you know, fishing the specific time and area, so above the Tustamina boat launch during the month of July. Within that framework, how do we provide an opportunity for qualified rural residents to harvest sockeye salmon with a gill net?
Ivan Insuleski thinks it can all come together and in a way that doesn't add to the management drama of two rivers that might already be too popular for their own good. In Kenai, I'm Shaylin Cochran.
The Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly has delayed voting on a package of air quality regulations following abundant public testimony at a hearing last night. The regulations aim at cracking down on wood and coal heating systems that chronically pollute neighborhoods. And as KUAC's Tim Ellis reports, many of the comments focused on health impacts.
The second public hearing in 2 weeks on the proposed ordinance to clean up the air locally took place under a blanket of smog that's been sitting on top of this area for several days now since the cold snap set in last week. That was reflected in comments by Assembly Deputy Presiding Officer John Davies when he opened the hearing.
The levels of pollution are serious and constitute a true health issue.
Like the previous proceeding, another standing room only crowd turned out again to testify for and against the ordinance, crafted by Davies and Assembly members Catherine Dodge and Janice Golub. Many talked about the health impact of the air pollution. Some expressed doubts that a direct connection could be made with problems caused by smoke from wood-burning heating systems, like Luke Mowry, who lives in Fox. He says he was born and raised here in a wood-heated home and says he didn't suffer any health problems.
Got wood heat, use it quite a bit. My place has our primary source of heat. My boy was born with respiratory issues, so I know that piece of it, too.
Bob Hook is a 37-year resident of North Pole. He says he burns 6 or 7 cords of wood a year at his house, and even though he suffers from multiple respiratory ailments, he believes they can't be directly linked to local air quality problems.
I have, in the last 8 years, developed asthma. I have COPD. I have respiratory issues. And can I directly correlate those to air quality? No.
Hook says more research would be required to make a direct connection like that, but he thinks poor air quality is at least a contributing factor, and because of that, he supports the proposed ordinance. Local healthcare professional Jennifer Nelson says Fairbanks Memorial Hospital has begun collecting data on whether and how much air quality affects the health of area residents. Nelson is director of the hospital's emergency services, forensic nursing, and trauma services. She says the hospital wants to offer its perspective on those health impacts.
There's been lots of comments made, but some of them were not necessarily backed up by hard data. So we feel the responsibility of Fairbanks Memorial Hospital is to provide some HIPAA-compliant data to aid in this discussion as it relates to our health.
Nelson says hospital staff crunched numbers recently and found a rise in emergency room admissions from 4 areas locally that registered high quantities of respiratory tract irritating particulate matter, or so-called PM2.5.
We have quite a number of respiratory-related chief complaints from wheezing, shortness of air, cough.
Nelson says the data is preliminary and that further studies are needed. She says the hospital is willing to conduct those studies, and Dodge enthusiastically encouraged her to proceed. The Assembly will include that data and all the public comments when it considers adoption of the air quality ordinance in its February 12th meeting. In Fairbanks, I'm Tim Ellis.
Since President Obama announced his plans to designate millions of acres of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge as wilderness, state legislators have taken to the House and Senate floors to rail against federal overreach. The speeches have mostly been indignant and incensed. But one state senator voiced his displeasure in a different way. Today, Fairbanks Republican Click Bishop gave a Susian speech on the federal government's attitude toward Alaska and read from a modified version of Green Eggs and Ham titled Click on Uncle Sam.
I do not like your crazy rules like those proposed by Sally Jewell. I do not like them here or there, and I do not like them anywhere. I do not want them near or far, not Sally Jewell nor Salazar. Could you, would you let us drill? We have the folks and they have the skill. We have the oil underground and we'll leave it nicer than we found.
The inspiration for the speech came from U.S. Senator Ted Cruz of Texas, who once read Green Eggs and Ham as part of a filibuster. The copy of the book Bishop carried with him to the Senate floor was signed by Cruz last year.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Ted Stevens International Airport to Germany and beyond. More information available on Condor.com. Condor, born to fly. Enroll now in the Health Insurance Marketplace. Sign up at healthcare.gov. Open enrollment ends February 15th. Depending on your income, age, and family size, you may be eligible for discounts that may lower your monthly costs and out-of-pocket expenses. Pick a plan that is right for you and your family. Call 211 for free individual assistance about the health insurance marketplace. Visit GetCoveredAlaska.org for more information. This message sponsored by Ashna, a partner of Get Covered Alaska.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechmiut.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Ann Hillman. This week on AK, curling. A warm winter has pushed many Homer residents inside the local ice rink, looking for a blast of cold air and a good winter sport. And curling seems to be just the ticket. It's a centuries-old game that can be played by people young and old, highly athletic or not, by rookies and experienced players alike. KBBI's Shady Grove Oliver stopped by an open curling night at the rink to see the action.
Now, this might sound funny, but if there's one thing every curler at the rink seems to agree upon, it's that this sport is pleasing to the ears.
I really like the sound.
Mike Hiller is pretty new to curling. He's brought his 8-year-old son Tucker along, who totally agrees.
Sounds really loud because of all the rocks hitting each other and just like going down the ice.
And his teammate, Jeff Von Rakowski, thinks it's pretty cool too. After all, that's why people call it the Roarin' Game.
When the two granite stones collide together, it just like echoes throughout the whole building, and it's an incredible sensation and sound, and it's like, man, it's gonna be a good day. Boom.
Oh, and Tucker forgot to mention he also likes the brooms.
Sweep it!
Yeah, it's the sport with the brooms. So let's be honest about curling.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, I mean, we're hucking a bunch of rocks up and down the ice, trying to get them to land in a little circle with brooms in front of them. So, I mean, yeah, it's kind of silly, but it works.
Brian Saunders is a first-time curler. He came down to the rink this evening with his friend, Anders Gustafsson, who's also never done this before.
And I think everybody had been, you know, gets the brunt of jokes for curling, and I wanted to see for myself what was it all about, and so got to come down and invited some friends to join me.
His first impressions? That curling lives up to its other nickname, chess on ice.
It's a finesse game, it seems like. You know, it's subtle movements, it's getting the launching down, getting the right strength that you're throwing, the weight they called it, and then learning how to curl and actually make it curve with a little bit of a hand spin.
That's curling in a nutshell. There are two teams with four players each. They take turns throwing stones across the ice to the house or the circles at the end of each lane. The people with the brooms sweep the ice in front of the stone to speed it up or make a course correction. And then it's scored on a point system depending on where the stones end up. Now, curling ice is a bit different from typical hockey rink ice. That's why many established curling clubs have dedicated arenas. But since the Homer Group started less than a year ago, it's working with a hockey rink that needs to be prepped for play. Elizabeth Diamond is one of the club's founders. She's walking up and down the rink doing something called pebbling,
which is basically just taking a sprayer and spraying droplets across the lanes of the ice, and those will freeze into little pebbles along the ice. So it's much easier to walk on, and it's much easier to direct the stone where you want it to go.
When asked how she got into it, Diamond credits the Olympics. It's the same story for several other people here this evening, including Natalia Crowley, who's been curling for a few weeks.
About 8 years ago, my husband and I were watching the Winter Olympics, and we saw this game, you know, curling, and we started watching, and at first we said, that looks extremely boring. But then we found ourselves just watching and watching it more for longer, and then we were looking for when the next games were happening.
When they heard that a group was starting in town, she says they couldn't wait to sign up. Now she's hooked.
I don't know, I just love the feeling of gliding on the ice, and I just love how that stone kind of carries you on the ice, and I also love, you know, it's a game with a lot of etiquette.
On top of everything else, it's polite. Remember Mike, who likes the sound? He calls curling a gentleman's game. He likes that he can play it with his son, that it's a workout but isn't too hard, and that it's inclusive.
It does not matter how good you are. It's just as fun no matter what your skill level is. It's all mixed all the time, every night, every time we come here. A completely different skill level. There's always new people, and it doesn't impact the game in any way. It's just as fun.
So yes, curling's kind of silly. But it's also a serious sport that somehow seems to bring out the best in the people who give it a shot. For AK, I'm Shady Grove Oliver in Homer.
Now it's time for 300 Villages. This week, we're heading to Huslia near the Koyukuk River, where there's been no shortage of winter this week.
Now
My name is Elke Vent. I'm the city administrator for the city of Huslia. We're not in the hills. We're kind of in a flat area. There's a lot of birch trees and a lot of spruce trees. There's no hills or anything around. It's kind of middle of nowhere. It's on a war near the Kaikuk River. There's about 330 people here. It's small. It's 54 below today. Oh, that's pretty cold. Last 3 days. The school is optional if you go or not. You know, those young kids, they might freeze their lungs. You have to keep your mouth covered, or if you breathe in that cold air, you could just feel it going down your throat. And if you have glasses, everything fog up. I dress up so much that when I walk, I just sweat. It's just like, oh my goodness. Yeah, they haul wood. And people drive dogs when it's warm. Not right now. People inside, get cabin fever. Well, people just there, work for the city, work for the tribe, work for the school. Seasonal jobs. Some are, they go firefighting. So. Those kids are out all the time, so they're running around, sliding down. Sometimes they have sledding down parties, and people go out and go out in the woodyard, and they have bingo once a week. I do beadwork, that's why. Or puzzles right now. It's too cold. There's a lot of stuff going on. People keep busy.
Elsie Vent is the city administrator for the city of Huslia. 300 Villages is AK's attempt to put every community in Alaska on the radio. If you want to hear your community featured, send an email to news@alaskapublic.org. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Shady Grove Oliver, Annie Fite, and Dave Waldron. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Ann Hillman.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org, and you can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Zachariah Hughes in Anchorage, Dan Bross and Tim Ellis in Fairbanks, and Shaylin Cochran in Kenai. APRN's Alexander Gutierrez reported from Juneau and Steve Heimel from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Fite. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the field. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. The Older Persons Action Group is the publisher of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper and the 2015 Directory for Older Alaskans. To order the directory or learn more, go to SeniorVoiceAlaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG. If you're ready to quit tobacco, Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line can help with free confidential coaching and support services through the telephone and online. Now introducing Text to Quit, a way to help you use medications correctly, manage urges, and prevent relapse all from your mobile phone. Call 1-800-QUIT now or visit AlaskaQuitLine.com for more information. This message is sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Prevention and Control Program.
Want to know more about how you and your family may get help buying health care coverage or avoid a tax penalty? Go to getcoveredak.org or call 211. This message sponsored by the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, a nonprofit health organization.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.